The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earl, and by him, Kyle Schoenewill. And I am excited to be back. Wow.
Welcome
As
back.
I was going through the intro there, I was like, do I remember? It's been so long.
Do you know the spiel?
The taste of strawberries.
That is not the reference I thought you were going to lead with there. Wow.
I did the double, the Titanic Return to the King combo, you know. Classic movies that people can't watch all the way through in theaters without going to the bathroom.
It's been 94 years. How was it, dude? You are trial lawyer officially now.
That is the thing. It's funny. I was telling you this, and a lot of people know this, I think, to some degree. But what's interesting about being in litigation at this stage of the world is almost everything settles before it goes to court. 99% of cases settle before they ever go to trial. Mm. And there are a lot of reasons for that. In some ways, the system is sort of built to facilitate and encourage that. But the reason why that is interesting as a lawyer is that you may work up cases for years at a time and never actually try them. And I have seen a ton of trials when I was working for a federal judge, but this was my first one to participate in, and took a witness and did all the fun Tom Cruise, Few Good yes. Men stuff.
You can't handle the truth.
It was wild. It was crazy. I got to take a larger role at trial than I thought I would.
Let's go.
Which was fun. It was good. And now I am on the other side and I'm slowly reintegrating into society.
Well, you're back.
Yeah.
And it's good to have you. And you won. You're back and you won. That's what I took away from that.
One thing I was telling you is that, you know, now that we've got this crazy summer almost behind us, look at all this free time I have. You know, it's perfect. Timing is perfect.
Just in time for all of the nothingness sitting around at home. Yep.
Honestly, it is, it's crazy. We are moving into this era now that I'm sort of just getting caught up on all the acting, writing guild stuff that's going on. And so, I mean, even if there were things planned for the next couple of months, I'm not quite sure what that would look like anyway. So I was thinking, you know, from a Disney or at least Marvel perspective, I'm not really sure what's going on the Star Wars side of things right now. But, you know, it is kind of, it works out well, like assuming that things are somewhat resolved before we get further into the fall. Because wasn't there, I think Candace was telling me, wasn't there like a walkout of like the Oppenheimer cast from the premiere or something like that? Like there have been some pretty big moments, even just from a promo side, right?
Right. PR side. They obviously didn't change the movie at all, but
right. The
cast did leave. Yep. That's true. It's been a really strange summer on so many fronts, to be honest. Like the box office overall has disappointed, which is really interesting. And then this strike on both the writers and the actors front has led to these delays. I mean, I feel like it's all coming to a head. Like there's a breaking point coming really soon where hopefully next summer we can look back and these things are resolved. And it's weird because the actual projects this summer, in my opinion, have been pretty great, a lot of them. But just the vibe around the whole thing has been really strange, no doubt.
Do you think this is going to sound like it's going deeper than we're prepared to go, but I'm genuinely curious to get your answer to this. We've talked about the kind of flood of content over the last several years and how that's maybe affected the way that people approach particularly television, but I think movies as well. Do you think that all of this is going to have any sort of impact on that model, the kind of like churn and burn, just get out as many things as you can and see what sticks? Or do you think that that's just, those are totally separate conversations?
I want to ask you, again, we should probably do this in a different episode, but separate conversations, I think, because do you still think that that is the problem? And if that's the problem, for who? Like each one of these projects that came out this summer are from different studios.
Yeah.
So like Oppenheimer wasn't rushed by anybody. That was the full thing that he had worked on forever. And Secret Invasion, for example, on the other side of it, is the first show since last November. I don't think they could have delayed this one even further if they, I don't think Marvel's churning and burning anymore.
No. And I don't think that it's so much a one studio problem in my mind as just, you know, it's like whenever, because we were both doing music when Spotify hit and it changed. Yeah, I mean, true. You know, it's like Napster had changed everything. Then iTunes kind of changed everything again. But it's like when iTunes was sort of still king, I remember I would get 70 cents on the dollar for every song, you know, a dollar song that I put out, which was a good deal. Yeah.
That's because people bought it. Yeah.
Right. And then Spotify, especially early on, I think that they've tried to course correct. But like early on, you know, the pay was famously low. You remember like when Katy Perry released what she had gotten from Teenage Dream, which had broken all these records, and it was like a couple thousand dollars or something?
Yeah, but all of that stuff, the two things for me is it's always changing so fast,
especially
in the entertainment and tech realm. And secondly, there's always an initial pushback, I think, to a new thing. And then people have to adjust and evolve. And then we look back. Like, I don't think, do you look on Spotify now in a negative light?
No, it's just kind of the way it is. No,
now.
And I'm not sure that I even look on it then in a negative light. I think that it was just a model that they hadn't figured out yet.
Right.
But the reason I think about that is I think about how little money artists were getting. And then I think about some of these tweets that I've seen go around, even like Cody Ziegler, I think Pete sent us that.
Oh yeah.
Talking about how low his residuals were for She-Hulk, which
$378.
And that's crazy. And he wrote that entire episode. And I think that the episode he wrote has to be the most viewed one to the extent Disney is tracking those metrics on Disney Plus, because I know a lot of people that tuned in just to see the Daredevil stuff. And so I just wonder if there's some connection between the way that things just aren't getting attention, like on a project by project basis, because there are so many things just in general with the streaming model and the inability to I don't know. It's a larger conversation.
Do you think, but this is maybe the dumbest question of the day, there is more content in general, yes, than 10 years ago?
I think has to be.
Just because if you had a popular show, it was only on one of a few channels, right? Back in the day.
Right. Especially if it was like a current show.
Yeah. I think as more and more content comes out and more companies do individual platforms, right? Like it's no longer, like there was even an era not that long ago that it was just Netflix that you watched.
Right.
Now with everything, it's going to, this is not the conversation I thought I was going to get into. It's going to get more and more diluted. And then what is the ultimate evolution then? Is the evolution that actually then something starts that kind of comes back to kind of like cable, where you can buy one thing that includes all of them?
And in some ways, it already kind of is what's interesting. Because, I mean, at one point, the idea was that Netflix was, you're right, Netflix was the only one doing streaming like that. And so as that picked up a larger library, you could get so much for, you know, whatever Netflix originally was a month, if you just pay for that subscription. And then you started having a couple others pop up, like Hulu and whatever HBO Go was at some point before it was Max. And
HBO
and
Max, then, Max.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, I don't even have to pay for cable. I'm just going to pay for, you know, one or two or three of these streaming services.
Right.
But now every major provider, I guess, has their own streaming service, really. And so Candace and I laugh all the time because we basically just have a cable package that we have created ourselves of right. like all of the streaming services.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So then is someone going to come along and sum those all up? $60 and you get all of them and it's yeah. this third party company or something. Or, and then, you know, as home theaters get better and better and more content shows up on those different platforms, especially if one kind of, you know, puts them all together, it's yeah. probably inevitable that theaters are a little less busy. Probably, you know, but if you watch a movie like Oppenheimer, that makes me sad in a way, you know? So who yeah. knows? Who knows? Hold yeah. on. I want to get into Secret Invasion.
Well, no, but I want to talk to you about Oppenheimer too. And so, because one thing that I've thought, I'm now kind of two blockbusters behind. I'm going to see Dead yes. Reckoning tonight, which I'm really excited about. Candace and I got to watch Fallout again last night.
Oh my gosh.
Which
yes.
was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And the Henry Cavill with the stash is a nice, it's a nice touch.
While you've been gone, it feels so strange to be multiple projects ahead of you. It like we haven't had that in years.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
Let me just say this. In the last month alone, I posted about this on Discord. I have watched Apple TV's Silo twice, actually. I'm watching Secret Invasion here twice. I have seen Dead Reckoning. And then last night I saw Oppenheimer. So,
man,
what's weird though is like, this is what I posted on Discord. The multiverse saga feels like another life at this point ago. Like,
yeah,
somehow all four of those shows totally seamlessly blend into each other in a good way. Like, when you see them, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I am constantly thinking about all four, even the theme songs for each. Keep me like in the same headspace. And that inspired me to, I need to do another Kyle Talks Composers episode on Friends from Work Plus, because I can't get over how much of a banger the main title theme is for Secret Invasion.
Yeah. That's what, yeah. It's so good. I have it stuck in my head all the time. Like every time a new episode drops the rest of the day, I'm doing what you were just
doing. It's that like major three that gets it stuck in my head. That chord, yes, whatever. Yep. I think it's a major three. Anyways, but it goes seamlessly into Silo, which you would love the theme as well. But thematically, like I saw Dead Reckoning and couldn't stop thinking about it. And then the next day I had to put on Secret Invasion and it felt like I'm watching the same type.
Yeah.
And then like I saw Oppenheimer last night and it just continues this thread of this like thriller, paranoia, the world's against us. It's just, it's a very unique era. And it's actually an era I'm getting a ton of enjoyment out of. Like it's lingering in my mind. So that's part of the reason to bring this all back that I was surprised the box office hasn't done as well, because these things are working for me. Really quickly, Silo, I really think you might enjoy. You should watch it. It's one of the best shows at wanting to know what the heck is happening. And if you haven't read the books, like I know nothing, it's constantly like, what? That makes no sense. Like, what's going on? The only downside there is Common. The rapper is an actor in the show, and he's terrible.
Not great.
It's terrible. I literally posted that Silo has some acting issues, and one of our commenters on Discord wrote, just came here to say, the acting issues have to be Common, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's... When I heard Kyle say acting issues, I knew it was Common. So there are a few performances that pull you out. That's a bummer. Secret Invasion, I'm finding to be incredibly consistent for me on all of these levels. I think the one thing with Secret Invasion is I'm not sure the actual original story is as hooky as maybe it needs to be. So for me, like every episode's kind of lingering in that like very consistent 8.5 out of 10 range, like every one.
Yeah.
Dead Reckoning is maybe a touch too long and maybe a couple of things are out of place barely. So I don't know that I think it's as good as like Rogue Nation or Fallout quite, but it's definitely still the most consistent action franchise ever. It is a tier one movie, definitely should be in the 90s. And I can't wait for you to see it tonight. It is so much fun. I mean, chill inducing moments here and there, like everywhere. That rhymed. I recorded that episode with our friend Stephen Matthew, which you need to listen to after you see the movie because he gave you a couple shout outs in the actual recording.
Feven.
Feven for. Oh my gosh. Okay, tiny backstory there, real quick, and I swear we'll talk Secret Invasion. Robbie
this is
and I
one
were
of my
doing,
favorite stories.
We were doing trivia with our friend Stephen. It's S T E P H E N. You can hear him on Dead Reckoning on Screensaver. And we were doing trivia and he turned, he had to say his name or something, right? He had to turn it in. And the person's writing down his name and he goes, it's Steven with a PH. And then like we're going through our trivia announcements and we're like, we didn't hear our team name for like a scoring update. And it's because the trivia person spelled it P-H-E-V-E-N, Feven. And we just thought, who would assume when someone says Steven with a P-H, they would replace the S with a P-H versus the V. So we always called our team name For Feven.
For Feven.
On Feven.
That is the, like, that's the kind of thinker that I need in my corner. I really like the way that person looks at the world.
Steven with a PH. Anyways, you're going to love it. It's unbelievable. And then this is just weird because I just watched Oppenheimer last night.
Yeah. Can you give me, so you and I have not talked about it at all.
Right. Because you haven't seen it.
Right. And I haven't even gotten a sense of whether you liked it or didn't like it. Can you give me and other folks a short little spoiler-free blurb?
Here you go. It's insane. It's probably going to win Best Picture. It will at least be nominated. Ludwig Göransson will win Best Score over Hans Zimmer's Dune. That's my prediction for the year right now.
Wow.
The score will literally change your life, Robbie. You will not stop thinking about it.
Oh, man.
Couple fun facts real quickly, and we're going to get into this so much on Friends from Work Plus because we're going to do a Christopher Nolan overarching episode, which would just be so fun to talk about all the different things. I didn't realize that Oppenheimer is truly 70 millimeter IMAX. Did you know that? It's not the 35 millimeter. So it's double wide film, and I'm not an expert at this stuff, but there are only 30 theaters in the world that can show it at 70 millimeter, truly. It's almost a 4:3 ratio. Does that make sense? Like it's almost a square. And Opry Mills IMAX is one of them. This is so random to say this, but Christopher Nolan paid to fix my theater in Nashville out of his own pocket. So this could be included on the list for some reason. I have no idea what his tie is there. So I saw it in actual 70 millimeter.
Is that what Dunkirk was as well? I thought Dunkirk had the same set up. I didn't see it on IMAX, but I did see it on 70 millimeter at one of the Alamos in Austin that has now closed post COVID RIP. But I didn't know if that was if that's how he's been doing it or if that's a new thing with Oppenheimer.
Unsure of that. Someone who's listening can fact check that and message us at the FFW podcast. But the thing I want to add, Rob, it is a masterpiece, and it's Chris Nolan to every extent you could possibly think of. He doesn't half, you know what, anything.
Right.
So it is full bore Chris Nolan, meaning like the dialogue is mixed a little quieter, but it's so fast paced, the dialogue, you have to pay attention the whole time. And because the movie is 3 hours long and it's a drama, like it is a little long. Like you leave physically exhausted because you're having to lock into the dialogue so intensely. And then it's so long and the movie is so heavy that I will probably never watch it again.
Wow.
So that's my premise. It is a Best Picture winner. It is that good, with the best performances you'll see of the year. No, like, I don't even think that's debatable. That I will never watch again.
Wow. That's a good review. It's, I always click on that YouTube link.
Draining. It's so heavy and sad. Like my brother came with me and he had so much fun, and it ended and he goes like, just a light little flick for you. Just a quick little, you know, light flick. It ends up asking all these existential questions about it. You know, and yet it's genius. Like Nolan sets up, Cillian Murphy is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Nolan sets up like every Nolan movie, right? He demands that the audience pays attention and that the audience is smart. And so I think it's not going to be for everybody. I really think there are going to be people that will be turned off by how much work it is. Does that make sense? Not fun.
Do you think is it the sort of thing that some folks are going to characterize as indulgent in that way? Just given the length and given how heady it might be?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little indulgent. But the character study of what it does to this guy and how seamless and smooth that transition is from him wanting to just be a physicist and work on science to what this could mean and like what it's going to do for the rest of his life and for the world. And then asking bigger existential questions about humanity in general.
I'm really excited. There are a couple things about that story that I'm not going to ask you, but I'm curious to see like certain moments that are so well known and so kind of legendary that I've wondered, is Nolan going to hit those straight up, or is he going to try to subvert some of those by reframing? So there's a lot. The history major in me is really excited, and then obviously the Nolan fan in me is very excited.
It's inspiring me to do more reading on the actual history because I'm curious how much of it is exactly accurate. It is, well, Christopher Nolan's my favorite director ever. You know that. I think this podcast knows that. So for me, almost everything Christopher Nolan does is a win. He's the most consistent, and I like all of his tendencies. But I definitely could see some reviews saying, quote, it's Christopher Nolan in all the best and worst ways. Right. That's what some people are going to say. Because if it's not your scene, like if you're not in the mood for that kind of movie, if it's not hitting you in the right space, you're going to be like, wow, this is long and Nolan and the dialogue is so heady and like the way he even cuts the camera away so that you don't know what's about to happen kind of thing is so Nolan. But then also the care to the time period accuracy, to the visuals of how they do it. And then Robbie, this is the last thing and I swear I'll stop. You are going to be absolutely blown away. And by the way, we're going to do an episode on this on Screensaver.
Right.
As soon as Robbie sees it, you've just had some stuff going on. You're going to be absolutely stunned at how good the special effects and editing are. And I don't mean special effects like CGI. I mean, I'm not going to ruin anything with that. But you'll know exactly what I'm talking about in how he decides to pace and physically edit the film that will get you... I can't say it. But listen for the actual special effects editing. If Ludwig doesn't win best score, then they're going to win best like sound design. If that makes sense. Like sound design and editing. Wow. So all four of those projects have been so tied together, but also just I'm in the weirdest headspace for the last month, just constantly thinking about all those things. So please, check out Silo if you have free time. That would be the last on the priority. Obviously, I can't wait to finish Secret Invasion and get into it here. But you have to see Dead Reckoning and you have to see Oppenheimer. And then we'll talk about it on Screensaver.
When you talk about us getting into theaters and the box office numbers being kind of down from what we might have expected and what other folks would have expected. One thing that I keep thinking this summer is, you know, I guess what we started with Spider-Verse, and then I think The Flash and Indiana Jones, and then now Mission Impossible and Oppenheimer, Barbie coming. It's just it's interesting just looking at the ones that I've seen. I feel like every time I've been in the theater watching one of these, I've just had a lot of fun. Even going back to Guardians, that's one of the things I said in our Guardians review, that they've all just been really fun movie theater experiences. And I feel like a couple years ago, that's what we were clamoring for, even aside from the kind of COVID halt. And then I try to think, okay, how would I feel, you know, whenever I was in high school, I lived in a small town and it didn't get a movie theater until I was probably a freshman or sophomore in high school. And once we got it, it was like, I think I saw almost every movie that came to theaters that I had any interest in. Like which is why I've seen so many movies from like the 2006 to 2010 range in particular. I think I saw Norbit, that one really bad Eddie Murphy movie in theaters.
You went to theaters for that bad boy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. If it was playing, I had literally nothing else to do.
I love it.
And I would go with a bunch of friends that we would all go to all these movies together. And I've just been thinking, you know, it was such a different time culturally in so many ways than we're in now. But I feel like if any one of the movies that I've seen this summer, including The Flash, had come out then, I feel like I would have walked away from all of those very happy, you know? Like, I would have felt like that was, like, we were living in some kind of golden age of blockbusters. And that's not me saying that every movie that I've seen, I view as, like, some kind of incredible achievement in film.
Right.
I think it's just strange to me, you know, because there are things that just aren't getting any kind of traction that we thought would. There are things that just are like a flash in the pan and then nobody's talking about them. And I don't feel like it's a quality issue at this point. I just can't figure out why people aren't paying more attention to this stuff.
So you and I are going to take some time off from this podcast in August after this crazy summer we just went through. And I put out 5 episodes last week
that's
on different platforms. We'll still be doing Friends from Work Plus stuff. And I've been teasing in other episodes, including last week with Annika, that this is an episode I want to get into because I've had a month now to really start formulating thoughts on how much I think culture has changed. And I think something that drew me to this podcast was your love for the sincerity of the Captain America character and that film, a film that has sequences that could be viewed as cheesy, objectively. Mm-hmm. But there's something inside you as a person that is drawn to just how earnest that film is. And I think that overall, as a culture, we've lost a little bit of that. We've lost a little bit of the joy of watching a story. And I'm not going to get into on this episode, like maybe the ideas of why that is.
Mm-hmm.
We've tossed them out in the past and we'll go into that more. But I do think that's confirmed at this point. All you need to do is log into any social media or look at the box office numbers and realize that I'm not saying something outrageous. I think when Quantumania hit, people viewed that solely at the time as like, oh, it's just Marvel Studios and there's a quality issue. And I was so stunned because I don't think there is. I think the culture has changed, not the movie has changed as much. I'm not saying it's perfect. Don't get me wrong.
Right, right.
But I think that that's the kind of movie that's a perfect storm of we've lost the ability to just go have fun at the movies. And then that movie comes out and it's like the perfect worst case for that movie just being crushed instead of just having fun at the theaters. And I feel like I thought the summer would kind of bounce us back, and I don't know that it has. Like, if Dead Reckoning is underperforming, how, I mean, what more do we want from films?
Right.
Like, if you want to go see an action film, what, like, what is it not doing? It's got all the best actors in the world. They're all giving great performances. It's the most insane stunts that they're actually doing. It's a cool story. Like, so that's my take on all these, honestly. That's been this whole summer. And ironically, Marvel Studios got all the heat for Ant-Man and the Wasp, and yet the best performing movie, I think, was Guardians 3. So after all of this drama, like Marvel Studios is falling apart, they still own the number one movie of the summer, I think it was, even over Mission Impossible at this point. So it's not just a Marvel Studios thing. In fact, sometimes it's the opposite. I just think we've changed as a culture more than the actual films have changed. But we have to get into Secret Invasion. I know, we'll do that in another episode.
There's a larger conversation about that. And there's a larger conversation I want to have about Marvel Studios in particular, just things that you and I have kind of talked about, things I've thought about. So those will be in, I guess, what's the saying? In the dock? Is that a thing that people say?
We want to have fun. You and I want to have fun with these projects. And I'm trying my best to not let everything I just said actually change.
Right.
Like, I don't want that to bring me down. And so I will never understand the idea that, for example, if you don't like Secret Invasion, why you have to constantly make a YouTube channel telling everybody about why you don't like Secret Invasion. It's because that's the only way you make money in today's culture is to actually do that. And so I've been conflicted. It's like, are we going to go that route? No, I want to just enjoy the things I enjoy. And if people end up not caring because of it, or because, you know, we get left behind, I think I'm okay with that. Like, I think I just want to like this stuff. And this last month, as far as the content goes, has been really fun for me just liking the stuff. If you want to find a podcast just like crapping on stuff, you'll find one elsewhere, I promise.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Anyways.
Well, wow, yeah, let's,
what a weird start to the day.
it's been a weird couple of weeks.
It has.
The reason I brought all that up is I would just say if folks have not seen any of the movies we've talked about, and obviously I can't speak to Mission Impossible yet or Oppenheimer, but all the others, I know a lot of those are still in theaters. And I would just say, for your own sake, this is not me trying to say, you know, save the movie industry or something. But I don't know. I think it's worth going to see these. I think a lot of people now just, they know that they can wait a certain number of days and they're going to hit streaming, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I will say, I think the reason why I've had so much fun, even at movies that were just kind of like fine but not great, is because I saw them in theaters and everybody there was kind of invested in that. And so I don't know. If you haven't caught some of those, I would encourage that you do so in that way before the opportunity's gone.
All right. The rest of today's episode is brought to you by Organic Price Books. You've heard us talk about them. They're our friends, and Robbie has some he can show right now, which I love.
Okay, so I have this out because I have been going through this big like Batman comics read that I've talked about a little bit, I think, on the Friends Former Plus side, and it has been this massive endeavor that I've made a lot of progress in while I was down from my surgeries. And so I've been really heavy into DC World, but then the other night I got caught up on Secret Invasion, watched the episode that I missed, and I just found myself, you know, one, getting prepped again for a Comics Corner episode that's coming up. I needed to read this anyway, but I cracked open my Secret Invasion omnibus, which is like pretty substantial here, and I just wanted to get back into these Bendis comics that I loved so much originally, and so I just started from the top, and man, I forgot how great this era of Marvel Comics is, and I love how much the show is pulling from some of the best parts of that. And so if you are interested at all in reading comics that are kind of hooked into the MCU right now, sometimes that's a tricky thing. Like with Guardians, there really aren't any comics that I think hit that vibe right. or even that emotional tone. This is a great one to use as a launching point because the comic is so good. The way Bendis writes is very, you know, I think I've said this before. He's a huge Aaron Sorkin fan. And so whenever he writes something like Secret Invasion, where he's doing the sort of espionage political thriller thing, he's doing it in a very Sorkin way, which I love. And so it's like these vibes we've talked about, I think he very much channels there. It's sharp and it's quick and there are a lot of twists and the art's incredible. And so if you are interested, you should check out the Secret Invasion comic. And the best way to do that is through our sponsor, Organic Price Books, where you can use code FRIENDSFROMWORK to get an additional discount on books that are already about as cheap there as you will find them anywhere else. Actually, they're typically cheaper than they are on Amazon, but you are supporting someone that is not Jeff Bezos, and you are supporting this show because we really like partnering with Organic Price Books.
True.
And so whether it's this or something else, they've got a lot of great stuff right now. I've actually got a cart loaded up full of things that now that this trial is over, I'm going to order and devour. So
yes,
if you are interested in really anything like that, just check out their website and look around. And right now, while we're still in our summer era, you can still use that code, reach out to us, and show us that you checked out there and used the code, and you will get a free month of our Tier 2 Friends from Work Plus status, which will give you all of our episodes on all these movies that we've talked about. Screensaver episodes are free. Screensaver Plus, where we kind of go back and do some rewatches and that sort of thing, that is only available to folks that have this particular membership. So this will be a great chance to get all of that and read some comics. So yes. Organic Price Books, code Friends from Work.
You can find the link in the show notes below. We'll be right back. All right, how about I just start with hitting you with a few highlights for me? Sonya is an absolute badass and one of the coolest new characters we've ever had in a show. Agreed with all that?
Yeah, agreed.
I can't believe how brutal they're making her, and I low-key love it. Plus the listening to rap in the car sequence. When she actually found the scientist, though, and then just shooting that guy in the head, burning the thing, but like it's so ruthless and she sells it so well. I would love a scenario, and I have no idea if it's possible, with Olivia Colman. I saw she was trending on Twitter the other day, probably because of this stuff. I would love for her to somehow hang around. What a great
I was addition. Thinking the same thing. This is such, every time she factors heavily into an episode, which I feel like is what mostly this episode and episode two were kind of some of her bigger moments.
Yeah.
It's just that I can't think about anything else. Like that's, it's such my takeaway. Like this was maybe my favorite, that whole dialogue between her and the scientist and like the moment you're talking about, and then also when she's actually going in and initially questioning them and shoots the guy in the leg, like
right away.
No, it's just so it's and like what I love is
it looks like she's enjoying it so much.
It's just so fun to watch, especially with her and Samuel L. Jackson. Like I feel like I could just sit back and watch. Like if you just want to make a road trip movie that is just Samuel L. Jackson and Olivia Colman talking to each other, I would playing watch
rap,
that movie.
Playing rap music in the background?
Yeah, the rap has to be in the background.
I absolutely loved this quote, and I'm going to get it a little bit wrong here, but when she says, the males in my species are also similar, that's what all the podcasts are about. Remember that line?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're either gaslighting you or trying to stab you in the back or something like that. I'm getting it wrong, but
no, I caught that. There are several that made me actually chuckle watching by myself in the morning, which is impressive. Yeah.
I also thought that she helped bring about a little bit of a good emotional landing with Fury. the end sequence actually talking about his wife and explaining what's happening with the vial, but she not knowing that his wife was a Skrull, and that whole sequence and her acting there just looking at him, I actually felt empathy from her for a second instead of just the brutality. And I feel like she helped land the plane there at the very end, which again led right into the banger of a theme, which is just Chris Bowers, this theme, dude. I can't get over it.
Land the fish. But
it's land this plane.
I
know this is a weird thing to get hung up on, but it's land this plane.
I agree that that final scene was, I mean, that's some of the early footage that I feel like we got from those trailers of him going in and getting his eye patch. And it was still so satisfying, but I love the whole, I mean, it,
you love that, the eye patch bit, didn't you?
I do. Classic. Of course. Nick, you know, I would.
Oh, yes.
But it's like even the, but the setup for it is what makes it right. Like that's, I could see myself coming in to talk about this episode and saying that, you know, it didn't, like I've said about other certain moments, like it didn't feel quite earned. It didn't feel like it landed. And I think that one, having this so late in the series was good. Like I, it did feel earned in that way. And I feel like it was also earned in that kind of emotional precursor that you're talking about at the grave. Really, it puts that scene in the right context. Like instead of it being this kind of like cheesy, shticky, oh, now I'm getting the suit back on thing, it actually does feel like it's a weight that he's choosing to put back on. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not like a, okay, here we go, I'm back in it. It's more of a I'm having to do this. And even the conversation that he's having about him being, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this now, but him being the one that kind of oversaw this harvesting process with the collectors and Gravik, like,
oh my gosh,
that on the one hand, you know, it makes so much sense. And I feel like it answers some of the questions that I had from the very beginning, but it also just feels so Nick Fury-esque. Like we've talked about this, and how there have been moments in the show where they're showcasing this side of Fury that we've seen ever since the first Avengers film, where it's like he is willing to do things that he maybe shouldn't be doing, and that other people, like the Captain Americas of the world, would and ultimately do disagree with. But
that's how he stays a step ahead. That's how he has to do it.
Well, and that's like, it's something else that I think is really, it's a big part of the Secret Invasion comic that you've got all the heroes that are front and center in a lot of ways in that event. But really, it's ultimately Nick Fury because of his lack of trust and the fact that he's been sort of standing back and tracing this. He's the one that's able to really help pull out the victory. And I like that's the case here, not so much with the superhero context, but out of everyone, Fury is the one that, like, he's done dark things and maybe even, like in the comics, could be blamed for the events that give rise to the Skrull invasion. Mm-hmm. But he's also, it's like that same instinct is probably the one that's going to save us from the Skrull invasion. And so it's like with the Avengers, Fury's probably responsible for bringing Loki and the Chitauri to Earth in the first place, but Fury's also the one that's able to kind of band everyone together and stop it. And so it's a really complicated tension. And I think it's just, that's what I want from a lead character right now. Yeah. I really like the way that's being handled.
I don't think I realized how much he was going to be the main character. I know that sounds obvious, but I thought it was a Secret Invasion story. I didn't realize like the theme is even called Nick Fury's theme. We haven't
think I realized that.
We haven't really had a project that's given Nick Fury this kind of background and platform, which has been fascinating. I agree entirely with the character assessment there. With the harvest, which I thought was a great paced Easter egg. Like my first note was, oh, Pagan couldn't get the Avengers DNA. What the heck is that all about? Then like halfway through the episode, they talk about the harvest. And I wrote down like the harvest, what the heck, not knowing if they'd actually talk about it. And then to have the episode end with that vial in like a very Nick Fury way where he hid it and stuff. So they have Avengers DNA in that vial, right? That's the point. There's Carol Danvers even in there. So theoretically,
yeah,
could be disastrous if Gravik were to get Carol Danvers' powers in his system.
Yeah.
But people were already questioning even, yeah, the legitimacy of Nick Fury feeling like he should even do that or could do that right away after that battle. And then also just how and when did he do that? Like if he was blipped for 5 years. But the practical side of it, I totally buy, because we saw there was a wrecking crew like cleaning up post that battle. Remember when Captain America is putting, you know, this, the Avengers compound's getting like rebuilt in the background and like,
oh,
you know,
right.
So it's possible that, you know, that went on for a while, that rebuilding took months. And now that we know Rhodey is a Skrull, it's totally possible that some of these Skrulls could have wandered in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And looked for DNA. So the practicality, I totally buy. And also just, yeah, the gray area nature of what he's even doing, I buy from him.
Yeah, it's such a cynical approach in the immediate aftermath of that. You know, it's like right. You think about the vibe at the end of Endgame, and for Fury to show back up and immediately...
Now, granted, he got blipped, so he may not even know what he all missed. So, like, if right away he was like the last thing he remembers is getting blipped, right? So right, he has a right to be cynical. I know he would get caught up on, like, by the way, the Avengers saved the day and Iron Man's dead. I get that, but...
That's true, but it's just, like, for him to... Yeah, yeah. I mean, to get to the battlefield quickly enough to try to
yeah.
I think it's right. Just such a perfect place to take that character. I think I remember after Endgame, there was some question. Someone asked him or the writers why he wasn't in the kind of final, you know, portals scene. He was in the Tony Stark funeral scene. And I think he had said something like, well, you know, ultimately it would have seemed a little silly to just have me out there with like a pistol shooting aliens, and which I think was correct. And now it's like, yeah, this is exactly what Nick Fury would be doing in the context of that big final battle. Like he would be coming behind and making sure that
a step ahead again.
Yeah. And putting himself in a position like with the weapons made from the Tesseract, to where he, like he says to Sonya here, doesn't need to rely on these people, because like if he can find a way to utilize, maybe, I mean, you know, maybe he talks about how Gravik got the idea potentially from him. You wonder if there was any conversation even then about figuring out how to utilize that DNA and utilize the powers of these folks.
It feels like the grounded side of the MCU is slowly building towards the X-Men and the genetic mutation side of the MCU. Like if the multiverse saga is mostly being handled in the cosmic sense and the quantum realm sense, feels like these projects, I don't know exactly how, right? But this whole like genetically altering yourself to have extremis and then these other powers, and then what could that mean if it goes wrong, or you know what I mean? Like it feels like I can see the very, very, very early foundations of where that could be heading. Not that we're going to get X-Men in this series. I'm just saying like years from now,
being like, that's
interesting. When this started.
I mean, I it's going to be interesting to see how Deadpool, which is really not that far away, how that would deal with any of that. Also, just as an aside, because I don't know that this, I feel like this came out after y'all's episode last week.
Yeah.
But talking about the kind of MCU mutant stuff.
Anik and I talked about it briefly.
Okay, the Ms. Marvel comic.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Right. Cause I know y'all talked about the set photos, which I still can't get over how much I love that Wolverine costume.
Well, but. And like the rumors that Deadpool might have to fight the Fox universe?
Well, there's a, and I'm sure this is where people are getting that idea, but there's a famous Marvel comic that's Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. And it's just, it pits Deadpool against the biggest heroes, you know, so it's like Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man, and just how he finds ways to kill everybody. And so I think
what you're talking about is actually breaking news, right? The
yes,
Ms. Marvel's had a couple of cool things.
So we talked about this a little bit in the comic book club, I think, on Friends from Work Plus, but there was a big kind of controversial moment in the Amazing Spider-Man comic, I guess maybe a month ago or more now, where they were building to a big death, and a lot of folks thought it was going to be Mary Jane, and in fact, it was Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, and so, you know, that all aside and how that was handled,
yep.
I think a lot of folks thought that they were doing that so that they could bring a version of the character back that has more in common with her on-screen counterpart. That's sort of been done to, you know, to varying degrees all along the way. I mean, it's like you look at the Guardians comics pre the first movie and post the first movie. And so, but here, you know, it's a bigger difference because the Inhuman stuff that's really baked into her origin, the powers look different, you know, which we talked about a lot during the Ms. Marvel show, where we're about to have another Ms. Marvel comic for the first time in a bit. And the series is going to be written by Iman Vellani, who plays Ms. Marvel in The Marvels, which is coming out in November. Wild. It's crazy.
Has that ever happened before? I don't think so.
Paul Dano is writing, technically, a series that is about the Riddler in the Reeves verse.
Okay.
So that's the only thing I can think of. Also, well, I won't get into that now. But yeah, so I think what's interesting there is in the comics right now, in the Marvel comics, one of the big status quo elements is what's going on with the X-Men there, where they found a way to resurrect mutants and actually more recently a way to resurrect people in general. And okay. So there are theories that I think probably carry some weight that we're going to have Ms. Marvel resurrected by the mutants and that she's going to come back with a power set that looks more like it does in the MCU and that she will now somehow be a mutant. And there are kind of a lot of ways where I think that could happen believably. But yeah, I think that, you know, we'll see how that pans out, but it looks to me like they're kind of going all in on Ms. Marvel as a mutant.
Well, and a little bit off that, I thought you were going to bring up the fact that Ms. Marvel, the show, is actually going to be airing on ABC
later
this year, which I actually think is a really fun idea. I don't know if it will be like the Sunday night, like, you know, Wonderful World of Disney slot that we used to grow up with when we were kids, but if there was a show to make that crossover, and I have no idea how many people are watching ABC anymore, but I think that's a fun idea. So not only is Iman Vellani writing the comic, Ms. Marvel's going to be on national television technically.
No, I totally agree. And I actually, we had a conversation about like Secret Invasion months back, like towards the beginning of this year with you, me, and Pete. And I had said then, which, you know, so I'll now take credit for this because I'm sure I told Kevin this and he picked it up and implemented. Mm-hmm. But I had said that I wish that with Secret Invasion, Marvel would premiere the first episode or two on ABC and then make it so that the rest is on Disney Plus, so that if folks want to finish, they can, but that like that initial episode would have the opportunity to hook more folks. And so this is not quite that, but I've long thought that Disney should be utilizing ABC in that way, because I do think there are a lot of folks that still just have ABC and NBC on that maybe are not going to seek out new streaming platforms. So I hope that they're going to start getting more creative with how to utilize that, especially, I mean, Ms. Marvel makes sense because of the Marvels coming, but I still, you know, I watch Secret Invasion and I think it's a show that, like, my parents would really like.
I've been telling my dad he needs to watch it.
But I don't know that they're going to, like, you know, they have to affirmatively go and seek that out on Disney Plus, which is not a platform that I think a lot of folks of that generation would think to go look, right? Like, it's a lot of content that's not aimed at adults. And so I think I really love this development for Ms. Marvel, and I hope that we see more of that. Sorry, that was a long tangent, but
no doubt.
Lot to cover.
I love it. Hey, you're just catching up, which is great. It's so good to have you back. Gosh, I love hearing your voice. I just have a few small things. Just real quick, you can react to this. First, let me just say that a couple Easter eggs here. Yeah. I absolutely love that Mason from Black Widow showed up. Are you kidding me?
Yes. Oh, man. I almost forgot that. Yeah.
What a perfect tie, though. He says specifically, I think the quote is in Black Widow, "I'm the person that people call when they have no friends." And he says that to, he says that to Natasha. I loved seeing it. It makes total sense. It makes so much sense that he's helping Nick Fury sneak around, just like Natasha needed help. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I mean, it's a practical explanation to the, like, well, where is Fury getting a jet? He's a wanted man. And how is he getting the, what do they call it? The Widow's Cloak, which was the second little Easter egg thing that was so cool, I thought. Also, again, Mission Impossible, you know that, masked people. It's like all this stuff running together, which is crazy. So I thought that those two Easter eggs combined with the Avengers stuff was a pretty fun, like, connected episode.
Yeah, I mean, briefly, this just kind of cements what I was saying, I think, in our last episode together, which is I think this is as good of a, you know, kind of Rogue One type project as we've gotten in the MCU. Like a when we're talking about something that is not retconning things, but kind of retroactively, like, infusing new elements to past stories. I think that has been done before in the MCU in ways that I thought were not bad, but not, like, excellent. And this, I think, has been excellent. Every single kind of detail we've gotten from Fury's past that's been filled in, or everything that we've had connected, like we have here with the Black Widow characters, like, it just all works really, really well for me. It feels like it's being written by folks that have a healthy respect for the story that's been told so far.
No, totally. I love that they have such a healthy respect for the MCU. I don't know the comics, so I can't speak to that. I do know a couple of people I've talked to that were Secret Invasion comics fans have been a little bit like having to adjust their perspective based on the comic when what they expected there. But from an MCU perspective, I love how much they clearly love what's happened on that front.
Well, and, you know, I think it's talking about kind of the difference between how content is, even the fact that I'm calling it content, the difference in how TV and film projects are being digested now versus even 10 years ago or less. You know, like, I'm thinking about Civil War, which is so different from the comic, like wildly different.
But widely accepted as great.
Right. And I know that there were comics readers at the time, and I had read the event before I went and saw the movie even back then. And, like, yes, I could have told you there are a lot of differences here, but I feel like because there was less of, like a comic book culture online. None of that got any traction back then. Like, if anybody, and I think comics fans at the time were just so excited to see any element of this stuff put to the screen in a way that was so good. Like,
comics reader, do you think that mindset has changed from, like, when Iron Man or Dark Knight came out, just like oh my gosh, these are the characters I read about in an actual good movie. Shifted from that to now I have expectations on, no, like, this is now culturally accepted as, like, the medium, these stories. So now I want to see them like this and this and this. Has that changed or not, do you think?
No, I feel like it has. And I think it's another thing that will be interesting to trace over the next couple of years. But we reached some kind of saturation point, And I was listening to a Grant Morrison, Jonathan Hickman podcast conversation months back that kind of comes to mind now, because they were talking about how in some ways the nerds won, you know, like for so long it was countercultural to be into this sort of stuff. And then in some ways, you know, now that we have the biggest movies in the world coming out of comic books, that's a win. In other ways, it's not, because now it's the mainstream, and how can you be countercultural and also mainstream? And so I think that you find folks respond to that in different ways. But
good point.
I do think that there's this tendency to just, part of it's a superiority, I think, that, you know, has been kind of mocked ever since Comic Book Guy on The Simpsons. This idea that, well, you know, in the source material, actually, it's this right. I know something that you don't, that I think comic fans have maybe always tended towards. But yeah, I think, you know, if any, I just sat here and talked about how much I love the Secret Invasion comic, and it comes from one of my favorite eras of Marvel Comics, period. And I just think it's so silly to, at this point, be upset about the way things were adapted. I mean, I was watching this is my obligatory reference. I was watching the Assembled episode for Love and Thunder the other day.
There you go. You got it in. Look at you.
Well, because I'm, you know, we're getting ready to pick back up with our rewatch here in the fall, and that will be one of the first ones. And I was just, they were talking about why they made the call to adapt Gore the way they did. And I remember there were a ton of complaints about that both before and after the film. And so as we're talking about that entire conversation, I'm always really glad when they make a choice to do something unique with the underlying story. And I feel like that's what they've done here. And I would way rather it be cohesive with what we've gotten in the MCU than forced by trying to make it what it was in the comic, which would never graft on correctly, in my opinion.
We don't talk for 2 weeks, and this is what happens. Just get the loosest, most wandering episode ever, which I just love. On that front, real quick, I've been thinking about the exact same thing. And this might not be real quick. Here we go. I've been thinking about the exact same thing, even from the perspective of Silo, because it's a book. It's such a small series of books, though, that I didn't even know it was a book when I started. And when you don't know anything, it's just a great story. So I found myself like intrigued with where it's going. One of my friends, Josh Wilson, who you know, was obsessed with the books, but he found himself getting a little bit bored in the middle because he knew the big twists that were coming. Like he was like, when are we going to get through this? Whereas everyone I know that didn't know the books was captivated by what was happening. And I just find that whole conversation fascinating. In that specific case, I wonder if Silo, the books, is so not mainstream that they figure we better adapt it exactly, literally. The few people who know the actual story might get a little bit bored because they know what's going on. But for the most part, it's such a good story, we don't want to change what's happening. And I think any single time you have this source material stuff, Lord of the Rings, Silo, all the Marvel Universe with all the comics, like we're taking all these projects and adapting source material, you always have that balance. And that's fascinating to me. If you keep it exactly the same, you're going to bore some people who want a different story where they can't predict what's happening. Why watch it when I've already read it? If you change too much, you're going to offend some people who are like, this is not the story I know. Like, this is not what I signed up for. And I find that fascinating. And I almost wonder if a determining factor is how well known the original source material is. But then even like Lord of the Rings goes against that, because that was a very well-known source material that is adapted pretty literally in the actual films, which goes against what I just said with Silo. So I don't know, but every single time the directors and producers have to make those calls, and there's always going to be some people upset either way.
Yeah, I mean, the Lord of the Rings, the Tolkien estate was not happy with what Jackson did.
There
with
you go. Films. That just proves my point then.
Right, which is wild to me because, and a lot of fans, I know so many hardcore Lord of the Rings fans that.
But it's mostly adapted, though. You know what I mean? It's not like a.
Oh, no, no, no. I agree with you.
Okay.
What I'm saying is it's just even there, Yeah, I mean, there are people that that are mad because there are certain kind of key plot moments that are changed. I was already thinking of Lord of the Rings before you said it, because I still hold that up as the gold standard for an adaptation, because I think that Jackson's instincts were so perfect there in what he chose to keep and what he chose to excise. But it's just interesting that even there.
Well, Civil War is another example of like a gold standard, I think.
Yeah, I think the difference is, to me, Marvel has always, and I'm totally fine with this, Marvel has never tried to adapt the comics per se. Like, Marvel is telling a story and they're pulling elements from certain comics. Mm. So it's like there are things there that you recognize, but it doesn't play out with the same set of characters or the same plot. Like, you're not tracing the same arcs. Whereas
Jackson's literally tracing the same story, but whenever his instinct told him, like, this will work better if I go this route for film, right, he was right.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, I think, but it's just, it's always funny to me that you can have a film trilogy that's that successful, both commercially and critically. I mean, it still holds the record for the most wins any movie has ever gotten at the Academy Awards, tied with Titanic. It's like, and still there are people that are mad because it wasn't done exactly the way that they thought it should have been done. And so which is then funny, by the way, because the Tolkien estate has always been really grumpy about that. But the Tolkien estate has been very behind the Amazon Prime series, which I think takes way more liberties, you know, with the mythology than the, so it's just every.
Plus, it's such a funny thing to be grumpy about. It's literally grown your brand by 1,000,000%. Right. So it's tough to be mad about that, but.
And that's I think that is also the case with comic book stuff, which is interesting to me. It's like, I think people are so mad about it, but also I'm not even sure that, you know, people have been talking about the comic book industry being on the verge of collapse for decades now. Everybody always thinks that something's coming because it's such a niche market, but I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a case to be made that the comic book industry would be much weaker if we did not have projects that had been willing to pull what they wanted and not pull the rest and make them these household, like the fact, I think Pete brought this up on the Sunday Post maybe a couple weeks ago, but like the fact that Iron Man, that Tony Stark even is a household name.
Yeah, right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like was not the case in 2007. You know,
I didn't know who Tony Stark was in 2001.
Yeah. So I think it's just a funny, like the Secret Invasion thing, a lot of people would have never heard of that comic and would never have heard of that if not for the show. And I feel like a lot of people are going to now go and read the comic and they're going to see, oh, wow, there are these things that are way different. And that's great because now they've experienced both and they're both good.
Wow. Totally agree. I'm going to bring us back here for 5 more minutes. All right. Five more minutes on this specific episode. We have the finale next week, which will be a massive thing for us. I'll be in Minneapolis working at a hotel when we record this live next week. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. The episode sets us up for a finale that I think could be really epic. I think the brutality and gruesome nature has to at least be noted real quick. It's notable. Yeah. In the same 12 months, we had Ms. Marvel, which is clearly aimed at a younger audience, a la putting it on ABC in the first place, et cetera, and mm-hmm. did that thing very well. Obviously, we have some concerns if you listen to those episodes, but it did what it's trying to do well. Just 12 months later, this is one of the more adult things they have in that mm-hmm. they're not shying away from throats being slit and gunshots going through legs and chests and heads and blood being splattered on the wall. And, you know, when you watch a lot of The Last of Us, it's very minimal. I get it. Mm-hmm. But in comparison to other Marvel projects, it is a step in that direction. It's at least a step in a direction of separating these genres out for different demographics.
and doing it really well. Like, I think that as we're looking back at, and this is a conversation that whenever I talk about wanting to delve into the state of Marvel Studios, I do want to do that in a separate episode. But looking back at some of the better films and some of the better eras within the Infinity Saga, and looking at, you know, like we always look at 2014 when Winter Soldier and Guardians both came out, and how different those are and how excellent and top tier Marvel they both are. And I feel like that's the best kind of snapshot of doing two totally different things almost perfectly. And that's what everybody talked about Marvel doing for the longest time. Like every, once they kind of got on a roll towards the end of phase two, it's like they were trying all different kinds of stories and just leaning into those vibes wholly and not trying to make them, not trying to make every movie everything.
Which, if that's their goal, I think they're doing a good job. Like with Secret Invasion, yeah, Guardians agreed. 3, those are two agreed. Excellent projects that are totally different.
And I feel like, I don't know, I'm curious how people are feeling at this stage, but we did talk a lot about after Quantumania, some of the pushback and whether that was well-founded or not. But there have been a lot of conversations around Marvel Studios going downhill and what's going right or wrong. And we've had those conversations and we've pointed out issues that we've had with certain projects. And then there was, you know, there's been something of a shakeup or at least a change in the approach, I guess, as of spring of this year, you know, where we were hearing that things were potentially slowing down and we've seen things get pushed back. And I'm not going to speak too soon because Secret Invasion still has a week left. But as we're looking back, you know, I'm talking about Guardians and Winter Soldier. And then, yeah, if we're looking at Guardians 3 and Secret Invasion, like you're saying, man, I don't know. This is what I would want from Marvel. Like, this is the kind of quality control that I'm used to, because it's like looking back at the Infinity Saga, there are things that were my favorite and don't things that started. Were my least favorite, right? It's not,
right.
It was not that every time I saw, like whenever I saw Doctor Strange, for instance, I had a ton of fun seeing Doctor Strange. I did not tell anybody, yeah, this is my new favorite Marvel movie. Whenever I saw Civil War, I did say, hey, I think this is my new favorite Marvel movie. And that doesn't mean that I thought Doctor Strange was bad. It just means that like you have preferences. And so do I have preferences still?
Yeah, people are forgetting that Marvel was never perfect with quality control. They've been very, very good, but the Dutch angles in Avengers 1 still exist.
Oh,
I mean, where was the quality control when that happened?
No, so, like, and that's, sure. That's the thing.
But we remember it so fondly, like it was only perfect, and so everything now is bad because it's not that. And I'm like, whoa, that's just, it's totally wrong, I think. But
no, it's wrong, and I think, again, we'll have a fuller conversation about this that, but I just want to say, now watching... Now, you know, 5 out of 6 episodes through Secret Invasion, I don't, like, I've yet to, I guess this is the test for me, right? Like, you and I talk about whether we'd be willing to show, to recommend certain things. And the even the projects that I've loved the most out of phase 4 and kind of coming into phase 5, I guess, I've still, for many of them, had to preface it whenever I'm recommending it to somebody, like, okay, just so you know, like there are parts of this that are really goofy, or, you know, like there may be some CGI things that you kind of have to look past, but I think it's really like She-Hulk, right? Like I really love She-Hulk as a show. I still feel like I have to address the way some of the CGI looks before I recommend it to folks. All I'm saying is these two projects that we've gotten starting with Guardians 3, I don't feel like I have to preface anything when I recommend them. And I do love that.
Okay, 100% agree. In closing, if you're ready to be finished here with Secret Invasion Episode 5, I would say my only question / critique is actually from one of our listeners on Discord, which you can find the Discord channel on the FFWpodcast.com. I've loved the whole series. I mentioned at the very, very beginning of this episode that I'm not sure – I've been as hooked. You know, I love the series. I think it's better and doesn't have the dips that a little bit of Moon Knight does with some of the CGI issues and a little bit of the pacing stuff with Loki, those middle episodes that I don't love. But those two shows in particular hooked me maybe more on like an overarching story of where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, like the finale is next week. And I really think that with the slow nature of the pace of this, that I've really been enjoying, this is going to be the first show in a while that I really feel like should have been 8 to 9 episodes. And I think if you had 8 to 9, like 45 to 50 minute episodes, because this is 6 and some of them are 35 to 40 minutes long. So it's actually even shorter. I think you would have a chance to let moments like Gaia and Vera, that conversation and like the funeral, you'd have a chance to let those breathe a little bit more and get a little more character work out of them. Whereas I don't fault the show as it currently is because they don't have the time to like spend a conversation with Gaia and Vera more than 3 minutes. I get that. But I think if you had extra time, and again, shout out to one of our listeners that said that, I think I agree with that, that like you could make this 9 and let the pacing ramp up even better to what next week is. Now, my only last caveat is I will take back everything I just said if they don't totally close the book next episode, right? Like if this is just a glimpse and then the Marvels carries on with this and talks more about this, then I totally take back what I said. But if next week they kill Gravik, all the Skrulls like come out and they're like, we're actually wanting to live with you and we're fine and everyone's happy and America's like, we can accept them. If that's how it goes, then I'm like, man, I wish we had more time to really build to that tension if that's the case. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you brought that up because the only thing, I mean, there are a couple of, because I've talked about so many other things, a couple of things that I didn't talk about that I want to like just at least shout out. Like I love the Super Skrull scene. Like whenever we see Gravik full on fighting, I thought the way
like his assassination attempt.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Man, that whole scene was one, I didn't see that coming. And just the way it looked, like you talked about it being more brutal. I thought it just also looked really good.
It did. I mean, crazy brutal by the way. Oh, the shotgun, like Vera and Gaia back to back, like, okay, brutal and awesome. Like, so cool. Like, such a cool set piece and sequence. But also, like, the guy hanging from the wire still. Gravik slitting that guy's throat in the assassination attempt. Using the Groot arm to go through his chest.
Like, And like, what we talked about, when I think that this show has done such a good job, whether this was out of necessity or not, but to the extent that you only have so much of a budget to work with when it comes to the visual effects of it all, like, I love that we have sort of used that sparingly so that we haven't, like we said, we haven't had to see every change, you know, from Skrull to person. They do a lot of that off camera. But then whenever we do need to see it,
it's good.
I think it looks really great.
Dude, Gravik looked dope when he went to his original Skrull form but had the Groot arm still, like, and was screaming. That looked pretty great to me.
It's such a, like, I mean, the Super Skrull thing, I'm loving the way it's been done so far, especially flirting with the Avengers powers and figuring out if something's going to come of that. Like, that's a very, like, again, the original Secret Invasion comic, like, when I hold this up, you see that everybody is like looking like different Marvel characters because the whole idea is that they're able to tap into all these Avengers powers. So that was one, you know, I just wanted to shout out that scene. And then the other thing, and I'm sure I'm forgetting other moments here, but the other one that stuck out to me was the funeral for Talos. I think that's something else that the MCU has typically done pretty well. Like, even when we originally made our big Thor the Dark World debut episode, and we talked about how there are so many things kind of laughable in that movie, but how his mother's funeral, I mean, the whole death is handled pretty well. And then, you know, Yondu's funeral is such a highlight of the Guardians franchise, despite how people may feel about the second film.
True.
And that, here again, I thought that this was really moving and made me feel like the death was being taken seriously and given weight. And so, you know, that's a character I was sad to see Talos go, but I feel like it would be cheap to bring him back now. And so I like that to the extent that is a final death. It felt like it, and it felt intimate and kind of, I thought, was a good way of deepening both the characters involved there, but also like their relationship with each other when we're talking about Gaia and Vara.
100%. I was sad to see Maria Hill go, but really I was sad to see Talos go. However, mm-hmm. I will say, if you can somehow get Emilia Clarke signed up for the future, I think that having Gaia work hand in hand with Fury in the future and maybe Olivia Colman is a perfect transition from those characters to new. So kind of hoping for that.
Okay, so that's where I wanted to end it. I wanted to make those couple notes, but then you talked about how it's going to wrap things. And, you know, I have enjoyed, we're normally not super speculation-y, but this is a fun one to talk about what we think is coming because it is so twisty and who knows. And, you know, I do, reading the Secret Invasion comic again, I'm reminded how much Abigail Brand does factor in and how much people have been kind of speculating from way back that Emilia Clarke may be playing that character. In the comics, that is a character that kind of runs the Sword Enterprise, I guess. She's sort of the space version of Nick Fury there. And I do wonder if we're going to be getting some version of that with Emilia Clarke. I mean, it seems like they're setting up a potential partnership. And we've sure have talked a lot about Fury working on this space station in a way that feels pointed, like there's going to be some return to that. And, you know, obviously we've got some shots in the Marvels that feel like we're going there. Do you think
Gaia will be in the Marvels?
Is Gaia supposed to be in the Marvels?
I'm asking you. Do you think that'd be a surprise?
I think that if she is, it would be like a, you know, Darcy in Love and Thunder kind of a thing, like a quick, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I mean, I do like that. Samuel L. Jackson said that this is something that's supposed to really set up the Marvels. And I have to think.
That's where I hope he's telling the truth and that it's not over next week.
Yeah. No, agreed. And I do think, I mean, the bottom line is the biggest stories in Marvel Comics involving the Skrulls, other than Secret Invasion straight up, they always revolve around stuff with the Kree. They always revolve around Captain Marvel. And there's a long history there. And I think that if they're going to continue, I mean, I think it's going to be hard to carry forward Kree stuff to the extent they want to and not have the Skrulls out there. I mean, that's like a good kind of cornerstone of Marvel space stuff is that you have these warring peoples that are, and there's always this like Kree Skrull tension. And I think that they're good archetypes because the Kree are the like warrior types and the Skrulls are the ones that are more like espionage oriented for obvious reasons. And so it's like, I wonder if we're going to get some version of that dynamic carried forward out of this. Cause I'm with you. I feel like if this, I'm not saying we need another season of Secret Invasion, but if this ends in a way where the Skrulls are, one, if the Skrulls are revealed to everybody and there's, like there should be, I guess, a lot of dismay and like pushback from the human population and it kind of ends there, I think I would be pretty okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I think that would set up some of what you and I have been sensing with this, like, this build towards just general anger with super humans and the Nick Furies of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it just leaves it totally open-ended, but they're willing to kind of continue to play in that, I think that I'm okay with. I agree with you. If we wind up at the end of next week's episode with this all totally wrapped up and all the Skrulls are able to find another home and go off planet and Fury saves the day, that's not only going to feel like a disappointment to me, just big picture, I feel like it would also be a lot to happen in one episode. Like, it would change the pacing so much that right. I can't see that going well.
Legitimate question. What would that even look like at this point? Like, a million Skrulls have to get on a spaceship. Who's providing these spaceships?
I mean,
I'm actually fascinated by if they do decide to do like a mass exodus off Earth and go back to space where they can, you know, battle it out with the Kree a little bit more and tell future mm-hmm. stories that way. I'm curious how they even practically pull that off.
I feel like it would have to be it would have to be something resembling the end of Age of Ultron, where there's just some kind of almost like Deus Ex Machina, you know, look, Fury was able to use his sword contacts to get everybody off and they found a new place, or they're all going to go up on like these bases and help work.
But
with
what, Kree ships or human ships from the sword? They have ships that can ships? Do that?
I mean, probably not to hold a million people.
Maybe Carol can go grab some and bring them back.
I mean, I guess we don't know how big, you know, how big sword is at this point.
Right.
But I do.
It's a dumb question, but I was thinking about
that. No. I mean, I think it's a fair, I mean, my question, I guess, with the, you know, setting aside what happens with Gravik and Gaia and all the other players, I wonder where this leaves Fury, right? Because if we wind up with everybody, I mean, he's already, I guess, the most wanted man and everyone thinks he killed Maria Hill. If I feel like the only way for him to clear his name is going to be, I think.
Well, the truth to come out will clear his name.
Right, which is worse in some ways, right, for him. Like, it's bad if he killed Maria Hill, but I think from some people's perspective, it would be even worse if he brought in this group of aliens that have now invaded the highest levels of human government, and he was the only one that oversaw that entire operation. Like, and so then I'm like, is this going to be a situation where Fury has to go off the grid? But I'm like, well, that's already been the situation.
I don't think so, because of that Marvel's trailer. However, it's possible that Marvel's trailer, that shot, is happening as a flashback pre-Secret Invasion, like pre him coming down. That's possible.
Yeah,
because we saw that post-credit scene of Ms. Marvel where Carol and Ms. Marvel are already swapping. So if that was pre this show, then there would have been time for him to be in space doing this before coming down to Secret Invasion. And maybe in our rewatch order in the future, there's a world where maybe the Marvels is first. Or, like I said, maybe it's just flashbacks to parts of it.
Either way,
a character, it is fascinating to see where are they going to take Nick Fury, because how many more places can they actually take him?
Because, I mean, yeah, we in the Marvels, right? I mean, he is kind of in his normal Nick Fury getup. Like, he doesn't have the longer beard. He's got the eye patch and the like trench coat on. So I feel like it would happen after, and based on his comments. But you're right. How would he be like reinstated in that way after all this without some kind of major plot development?
That's what I'm saying.
I'm really like,
which
that's
makes
the thing.
Me nervous,
I'm excited.
Which makes me nervous that next week is going to be a perfect bow in a bad way. Because he's got to redeem his character so much in one episode that he is back on this ship if the Marvels takes place post Secret Invasion. And he's casually back at his role and left his wife again. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, and I do, you know, we did have the Skrulls kind of turn on Gravik and that assassination attempt. I do feel like they're laying the groundwork for the Skrulls to not, you know, for them to kind of abandon Gravik's crusade and maybe like in, you know, in Talos' death kind of choose to follow his path, and maybe that's where we get Gaia kind of taking that Abigail Brand role, and maybe that's how we do get some of the Skrulls, a lot of them, to kind of go and take this new role with her, with S.W.O.R.D. or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. I'm like, I feel like I'm about as curious and invested as I have been going into a Disney Plus finale, at least since like Loki. Like, I feel like this is the first time I'm really like, oh man, like what is going to happen? Because it feels like not just a focus thing. It feels like whatever's going to happen is going to have really major impacts for the MCU. Like, I was really, you know, I was hooked into Moon Knight. I was hooked into She-Hulk, but I also knew that there was right. no world where that was going to have some kind of MCU-wide effect. And here it's like,
it's yeah, kind of like the opposite. The whole show is so small and focused so far, but the implications could end up being really wide-ranging, you know?
Yeah.
I love it. What a mega episode on this random week here. All the same stuff. I hope you have a good time to Robbie. I hope you have a good time at Dead Reckoning tonight. To our listeners who haven't seen Dead Reckoning, please go watch all the Mission Impossible movies and then go watch Dead Reckoning. Mm-hmm. Robbie, enjoy it. I can't wait to hear what you think. When you get out of the theater, please listen to me and Steven's episode on Screensaver mm-hmm. and let me know, because I'm curious what you think, how you think Steven did as well. Shout out, Steven, if you're listening. And then if you get a chance to watch Oppenheimer this weekend, hopefully we can record yes. this weekend and get an Oppenheimer episode out so we can talk about that in full. I have so much more I want to say about both those films that I can't right now. And then the finale next week. And then we both just retreat to the beach for a little bit and totally reset and reconnect with our families and lives and, you know, the whole deal. Hope everyone out there has that similar of an enjoyable week planned. I have a lot of fun stuff. I'm going back to Michigan this week, so I'll be in touch, but just ready to close out the summer with a bang with a few of these things. Thank you so much for listening. All of the typical spiel stuff. Please rate, review, subscribe. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube. And we'll be back here next week talking about Secret Invasion Episode 6, the finale, right back here on Friends from Earth.